Welcome to Unpacking the Digital Shelf, where we explore brand manufacturing in the digital age.
Hey everyone, Peter Crosby here from the Digital Shelf Institute. All right, so I lied. We've been calling it Profitability Month on the podcast, but here we are spilling into May because there's just so darn much important to say. This episode is an audio version of a recent DSI webinar featuring, of course, Lauren Levack, director of the DSI, and the brilliant Andrea Lay, founder and CEO of Allume Group. They discuss how to embed the best practices for achieving profitability into your strategy and some of the pitfalls to avoid with specific retailers that can be profit killers.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to today's DSI webinar as a part of Profitability Month. So we are in April and the theme is profitability, everything, P&L, profit, finance, how to become more profitable in your business. And I'm so excited to have Andrea Lay from the Allume Group here today to talk to us about profit killers and pitfalls, one of my favorite titles of a webinar ever, to avoid in your e-commerce strategy. So Andrea, thank you so much for being here today and for walking us through this. I will let you introduce yourself and kick off. Just a couple quick housekeeping items too. Please feel free to ask questions throughout this whole presentation. You can put it in the chat or the Q&A and we will make sure that we get to them. So Andrea, thank you so much and hit it.
Thank you, Lauren, for having me. And thanks to the DSI. We have always been very appreciative of the partnership with the DSI in helping bring all kinds of education to all of you digital professionals. So thanks for having us. So today we're going to talk about getting rich. So profit killers and pitfalls in your e-commerce business. And we're going to give you a success framework for mutual profitability between consumer brands and e-commerce retailers. And this is part of a whole profitability month for DSI, right, Lauren? We've got, we had, I think, coming up like supply chain, how it can affect profitability with Jamie Dooley from TPG. That's coming up on April 10th. On the 17th, you've got another, a part two to that, the importance of engagement with revenue growth. On the 24th, there's a profitability Q&A with Chris Perry from First Mover. So lots of leaders in this space that you'll get to hear from later this month.
Yeah, thanks for the teaser, Andrea. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. I'll be attending some of those. They look amazing. So I'm Andrea Lay. I'm the founder and CEO of Allume Group, and we are an education company. We do live workshops like today, and we also have an e-learning platform with a good number of courses, a robust curriculum on e-commerce related topics. I am also co-host of the CPG Guys podcast. If you don't listen to the CPG Guys podcast, I highly recommend it. We interview retailers, we interview brands, and we interview service providers every week. So you can hear kind of some of the latest and greatest from the provider space, as well as how other consumer brands and retailers are thinking about commerce. And I'm the former VP of IdeoClick. We were an Amazon managed services agency that served about 200 to 300 consumer brands on Amazon. And I'm also a former Amazon executive. I was a category leader there for 10 years across a great many product categories. But some of my bigger claims to fame at Amazon were launching their automated price matching system, as well as the launch of the CRAP program or the CRAP program. If you're not familiar with that, that's the can't realize a profit. And it's Amazon's kind of way of designating between products that are profitable and unprofitable. And I'm also a top 100 retail influencer. So you can follow me on LinkedIn for lots of educational content on e-commerce. And this is actually one of our courses that we're going to go through today. So you can get a badge on LinkedIn and bragging rights for taking one of our courses. And so I'll flash these instructions again at the end of the course. But you can scan this QR code. You'll take a very brief survey. It's like three questions, and then be given your credential to add on LinkedIn as completion of one of our courses that builds up to our e-commerce strategy certification. So before we get started, I would like to hear from all of you and let you all hear from one another. What is your biggest profitability challenge in e-commerce? And we've listed some here, but on number 7, you can see we have another. So you're welcome to drop it in the chat or the Q&A if your profitability challenge area is not listed.
So Molly, if you could pull up the poll, we'll have everyone vote. Perfect. All right. So everybody should see a poll come up on their screen. Please go ahead and vote. I see some votes coming in, so I will let everyone respond really quickly. Make sure you go back to your Zoom screen and answer. All right, perfect. We see answers coming in. I am going to close the poll in 3, 2, 1. All right, Molly, you can close the poll and let's see where we're at. Okay, so it looks like we have 38% are focusing on distribution strategy, price matching as a challenge area. And then the coming in second is retailer pressure on trade terms. Is that surprising to you, Andrea? Not super surprising to me, but
no. And I'm also not surprised that it's a bit of a mixed bag, you know, in terms of a little bit of a distribution across the different challenge areas. And there is something that most, if not all, of these e-commerce profitability challenges have in common, and it is that they are largely under your control as an organization. It's hard. Yeah. It's not to say that makes it an easy path forward, but they are largely within your control. And so today we're going to talk about how you can kind of harness some of that control and work within your organization and with the retailer to improve some of those profitability items. So we'll talk a little bit just about mutual profitability in e-commerce. This is, I have to say, one of my favorite topics. It's my favorite topic for a couple of reasons. I think it's really interesting, and there are a lot of ways to solve the problem. So I think there's some creative problem solving that gets to happen. But I think it's also about partnership and relationships and negotiation and trust. And those are all really important skills for us to have in business in general. So we'll talk a little bit about that as well. Then we will walk through the RICH framework for mutual profitability. And RICH stands for renegotiate, invest in win-wins, carefully optimize advertising, and heed the root cause. And then we'll wrap up with a few takeaways. So our goal for today is, we'd mentioned that a lot of the profitability challenge areas are largely within your control in your organization or your clients, within your clients' control if you're in an agency environment. And today's goal is to really empower you and give you some tools and vocabulary and frameworks that you can use inside your organization. You know, that within the DSI membership, we are often working with super users, right? A lot of you are experts in this already. You understand how to measure it. You understand, and you know, in many cases, how the retailers think about it. You know what to do. It's just really hard to do it. It's really hard to gain support within your organizations, and that's the thing we hear most often from our clients is that, you know, they know that it's something to do with their distribution strategy. They know that it's price matching across retailers. You know, they know these things, but it's really hard to evangelize some of that change and make a business case for some of that change within the organization. So we'll talk a little bit about that today. So first, just what is mutual profitability? Mutual profitability is the goal here on both sides, both the supplier and the retailer, are to reduce costs between production and consumption. So that's at its most basic level. It's how do we reduce costs between production of our products and consumption of our products on both sides, on the retailer side and on the supplier side. And I think most of us have experienced that if we're able to improve that retailer profitability, we're often able to improve our own profitability just as a result, because improved retailer profitability means we can get better negotiated terms, we can get better advertising exposure, you know, better things happen, more growth if we're able to improve that retailer profitability. And it gives us better access to some of the win-win types of programs that we'll talk about later, which can result in higher growth rates, things like subscriptions and retail media, and all those types of growth drivers. So is it possible? Is it possible for both the retailer and the supplier to become more profitable at the same time? And I believe that it is, yes. And that's because we at Allume Group subscribe to a philosophy of negotiations that are called interest-based negotiations. And in an interest-based negotiation, the general idea is that the more interests we bring to the table between the two parties, the more likely we are to have a mutually beneficial or a mutually successful outcome. So as an example, if we're just negotiating on a damage allowance, for example, someone's going to win and someone's going to lose. Whereas if we bring more interest into the negotiation, if we bring in, you know, other challenges that we're having with the business, you know, maybe our content updates aren't sticky, or we're having some challenges from a supply chain perspective, or we're getting a lot of chargebacks, or, you know, we need the retailer to order something a little bit differently. If we bring more interest into the negotiation, we have a higher chance of increased success on both sides for both parties. But the challenge with interest-based negotiations is that it requires a lot of trust between the parties, and it also requires us to use joint problem-solving skills, both with the other person that we're negotiating with on the retailer side, but also within our organization. So we have to really think about how do we work together within our organization, because a lot of those things that I mentioned, you know, the supply chain challenges or sticky content or whatever it is, those are interests that might not be within our own department. And so we really need to reach out within our organization and think about how can we make the negotiation mutually successful for the retailer, but also for us as an entire organization, kind of putting our big hat on. So this isn't easy, right? This is, according to Profitero's organizational benchmarking survey, 49% of brands say that these pricing and profitability scenarios are their top challenge area in e-commerce, and almost 30% say measuring the return on e-com is a top challenge area. So this is really hard, right? This is not an easy thing for us to do. But our goal is that you leave today's webinar with some helpful sound bites, some frameworks, and some ideas that you can try to improve your e-com profitability with retailers, both through some of the external initiatives with retailers, but also internally. So we teach at Allume Group everything based off of the e-commerce success framework. And I'm going to walk through that really quickly so that you can see where mutual profitability sits in terms of the pillars of success in e-commerce. So in order for products to be successful in e-commerce, we have to have a sustainable strategy. So that includes our pricing strategy, distribution strategy, promotional strategy. We also have to have items properly and accurately set up in retailer digital catalogs. You know, garbage in is garbage out, and we'll experience a lot of hiccups later if we don't have the correct information in. We can also optimize things like search and retail media spend by having really strong content on our pages. Products have to be financially viable. They have to be financially viable for us as the manufacturer, and they also have to be financially viable for the retailer in order for the retailer to be interested in driving demand for us. They need to be in stock. We can't sell something that's not on the digital shelf. And they need to be receiving traffic and activity. And so that's where we start thinking about promotional strategy and retail media and driving traffic to our items. And the concept of mutual profitability kind of hits on two parts of the pillar. It hits on the sustainable strategy because it's often taking a step back and reflecting on, as an organization, our go-to-market strategy, our distribution strategy, our pricing and promotional strategy, but also on the financially viable piece, because we obviously need this business to be viable. And you can use this as a tool internally within your organization. So we go through this exercise a lot with clients where we actually have them rank themselves. Where do they sit on each of these components of the e-commerce success framework from a good, better, best standpoint? And it can really be a useful tool inside the organization to help kind of align everyone and rally around where our biggest opportunities are. And so if financial viability and sustainable strategy are pain points for you within your organization, which they might be because you're here today, you know, this is a tool that you can use to help you kind of build a business case internally. So first, let's get on the same page about economics of e-commerce. So there are typically three different terms, and there's variations of these for different retailers that they'll use to talk about e-commerce profitability. So pure profit margin, net PPM, and contribution profit are kind of the three different measures. And within the fully loaded contribution profit model, you know, there are a lot of costs and a lot of revenues incorporated into that. And I'm not going to spend a ton of time on this because you have another podcast coming up where you're going to spend time like actually building a retailer P&L for your e-commerce business or for a specific customer. But the thing that I will say is that internally and with the retailer, what gets measured gets done. And the comments on this would be, so first getting some internal alignment on what measure of profit you're using and what you're tracking against. So whether that's like EBITDA or contribution margin or ROI on retail media spend or whatever it is, like making sure that you're aligned inside your organization, but also being mindful of the measure that the retailer is using and tracking against. Because if you're tracking against different measures, you're going to obviously have a problem. You want to be speaking the same language. But it's also important to notice that the retailer is going to use whichever one serves them best in the moment. And so as an example, when in our experience with Amazon, you know, if they're negotiating on trade terms or funding, from the commercial team, they're going to be talking about PPM, net PPM, because they want to, you know, incorporate that in as the, they want to isolate that essentially. If they're talking about, you know, how you need to have different packaging or reduce the weight of your products so that they can ship more economically, in that case, they're probably going to use contribution profit. So it's important to understand the measure that the retailer is using. Amazon, as an example, does have the most sophisticated contribution profit tracking tool. So every single cost and revenue associated with an item is tracked in their CP tool. But other retailers are getting there as well and catching up on the item level profitability. So the good news is there are a lot of costs here, but there are also, that means there are a lot of opportunities. Each one of these can be line items to isolate and try to improve. And every e-commerce marketplace is a little bit different. So I think this is where when we talk about mutual profitability, it helps to get really specific and even specific about each retailer. But the one thing that they all have in common is that they're all sort of designed to sell the next best thing. So if you if your product's out of stock or if you're, you know, the product's not profitable enough for the retailer, or there's some challenges there, like other products will float up in the search results to kind of take the place of it. And I think in thinking about these different retailers, and we've just got three here as an example, Amazon, Walmart, and Target, a really understanding kind of their overall strategy, their pricing strategy, their philosophy, but more importantly, where their profit comes from, I think is an important factor because you're going to negotiate differently with each of them kind of knowing their strategy. So I'm just going to zero in on the profit comes from section. So if you look at Amazon, you know, most of their profit now is and their growth for that matter is coming from software and services. And so this is really thinking about Amazon Web Services, Amazon advertising revenue, third-party seller services. And so their business model is becoming more about the commissions on those types of activities versus the margin on the retail business. So that's important to be mindful of when we're going to the negotiating table with them. For Walmart, it's a little bit more about scale. So it's just a really low margin on a whole lot of sales across a whole lot of stores. And then with Target, you know, they kind of operate a little bit more like a fashion retailer, not just in the apparel and accessory space, but sort of in general, you know, and a lot of their profits coming from their private label. So when we're negotiating with Target, you know, we need to be mindful that some of our most competitive brands are actually some of the ones that they own, and where they drive a lot of their profit. So the retailer e-commerce profitability really depends on a few different things. First, it depends on the delivery mix. Delivery is the biggest expense in e-commerce, and they're kind of the retailer balance of ship to home versus buy online pickup. First of all, the economics of those businesses are really different. Pickup's obviously a lot less expensive for the retailer. But being mindful of that mix for that retailer is going to be really important when you're going to, when you're negotiating with them, because it'll help you understand their cost structure a little bit better. So that delivery mix is really important. As you can see, you know, a retailer like Kroger is really indexing more on, from a digital sales perspective, indexing a lot more towards buy online, pick up in store, versus, you know, obviously Amazon, who's a pure play, who's shipping everything to home. So delivery mix is an important factor. And then the maturity and scale of the retailer is another important factor. So, for example, on the delivery side, you know, Kroger, up until the, you know, a more recent announcement, had been using Instacart for all of their home delivery. That's expensive, right? Like, that's not a very scaled out solution. It also depends on the maturity and scale of their membership programs. So like Walmart Plus, Amazon Prime, Target Circle Red Card. and then lastly, on retail media. So, you know, really thinking about how much of their revenue is coming from retail media. And for all the players besides Amazon, it's still a pretty small revenue line item. And then lastly, just their leverage relative to yours. That's an important factor in their e-commerce profitability. You know, how big of a player they are in their category. You know, we've been using some of the bigger box examples, but, you know, you might, if you're a pet food manufacturer, you might be working more closely with Chewy and doing like half of your sales there. And so how big of a player they are in their category, how much reach they have, and how much scale they have there as well. And just to dive like a little bit deeper on these retailer delivery economics, because this is the biggest cost driver in e-commerce for the retailers. You know, it really, if you kind of look at the three different delivery methods, buy online, pick up, home delivery, which includes perishables, or ship to home for like shelf stable items, the economics of each of these orders are really different. So getting understanding that retailer's mix, I think, will give you some insight into that retailer negotiation. So, you know, for pickup orders, those are typically really big orders, typically the highest. They have a little bit lower of a delivery cost. Home delivery for perishables has like some of the highest delivery costs, but at least it can be amortized over like a medium-sized basket. And then for ship to home, shelf stable items, you know, those are onesie twosies. Like the delivery economics for those are the worst, because they're allocating that delivery cost to like one or two items per order. And so really thinking about, you know, which of these the retailer is indexing more to will give you some insight into their economics, which can help in the negotiation. So there are really only four ways to improve e-commerce profitability. The first is you can drive just more revenue, and you know, even more revenue of lower drive without improving profit margins at all, just drive more revenue, which in turn will drive you more profits. So from this perspective, we're talking about things like some of the loyalty driving initiatives, like you know, subscriptions and you know, loyalty marketing. So you can drive more revenue from existing customers. You can also drive up retail prices. That helps drive more revenue. And you can do that through assortment, differentiation, exclusives, et cetera. So you can attempt to just drive more revenue in one way or another. And as we go through this, I encourage you to think about like which of these four is your organization focusing on, and you know, and think about how that's maybe playing out for you and how you might be able to expand into some of the other three. The next way to improve e-commerce profitability is to drive down costs. So you can make products more e-commerce friendly, more shipping friendly, better suited for those delivery economics. You know, you can improve some of the compliance with the retailer supply chains so that you're receiving less retailer fees or chargebacks. You know, you can attempt to drive more efficiencies in the supply chain for both parties. And there are also some retailer programs that can be win-wins. On the Amazon side, that might be Vendor Flex, or, you know, looking at some of the pallet ordering programs they've been pushing. Those things don't make sense for every brand, but it's really just about doing the math to see, based on what they want to charge you for that program, what are the cost savings that you're going to incur within your organization. So drive more revenue, drive down costs. And the third way is to give the retailer more money. So you can advertise, you know, that kind of also would help you drive some more revenue, but to have some more performance-based marketing. Or you can just pay the retailer. You can buy things you don't need. You can pay crap allowances or margin guarantees. You know, those generally aren't a great long-term strategy, but they can be a good bridge solution if you have new assortment that's going to be hitting. And that assortment might be, you know, more suited for e-commerce or carry higher profit margins for you and the retailer. So it might be a good short-term solution. So drive more revenue, drive down cost, give the retailer more money, or don't sell stuff that's unprofitable. And this can be in the form of, we're seeing more and more brands do what we call self crap out, or, you know, items that are just driving a lot of losses for that retailer that are starting to affect the overall negotiation between the supplier and the retailer and put the supplier in a bad position. You know, even if it's a top seller, if you've got like a $7 mascara that's really unprofitable for that retailer because it's always shipping alone and shipping to home, that might be an item to discontinue for that retailer. And those are hard choices to make because they have an immediate revenue impact for us as consumer brands. You can also, you know, have someone else sell them. So do it through a third party seller on one of the major marketplaces, work through a trusted reseller. There's some other ways to ensure that the shopper still has access to the products, but not sell them yourself and not be in that negotiation with that retailer.
And so, Andrea,
just
a quick question around the don't sell stuff that's unprofitable. In terms of maybe an item not being profitable on its own, what are your thoughts on bundling or doing some sort of gift pack? Is that an opportunity from a profitability standpoint that can help?
Absolutely. I would put that under like the designing maybe the product, going to the drive down costs and designing the product a little bit more for online. Like, are there ways to increase the pack size? You know, even if it's price match, like if you're selling a 3-pack of hand soap, and the retailers are still matching it as, you know, 3 of the singles, like depending on the economics of the item, it still might be better profitability than if you were to sell it alone. So one big mistake that we see here, though, when it comes to design for online is like really assuming like the best case scenario. So, for example, we worked with a client who sells, I'm trying to remember what it was. I think it actually was hand soap. And they put together a bundle of 3. And they were very excited about it because they could make it an inner, and it worked really well in the supply chain. But when they ran the economics on it in advance, they assumed that the retailers would not price match like 3 times the each, basically. And we want to assume the worst case scenario when we're designing for online or when we're changing pack sizes. We want to just assume that they're matching it and see if, you know, even if they are matching one another, if the profit margins are improved just because we're able to amortize that delivery cost over a higher retail selling price. So I would encourage you to really make sure that you're doing your math on that in advance before you kind of push something through an innovation cycle, because this can be very lengthy and it can be incredibly disappointing. And it can look really bad for your team if you've kind of pushed this thing through and then it doesn't actually deliver what you were hoping. So plan for the worst case scenario, I would definitely say. So those things all sound really easy, right? Super easy. You can get your product development team to design new packaging for a retailer that represents like 10% of your business. I'm being sarcastic. These are hard. It's hard to make business cases for some of these things internally. So really quick poll. What is your organization's go-to profit improvement strategy? So of those 4 that we talked about, where does your organization focus the most? Driving more revenue, driving down costs, giving the retailer money, not selling stuff that's unprofitable.
So everyone should see a poll on their screen. So come back to the Zoom window and make sure that you answer the poll. Looks like we have a bunch of responses coming in. Give it a couple more seconds for everyone to answer. All right, we're going to close it in 3, 2, 1. All right, so it looks like 36% of people say drive more revenue, 27% say drive down costs, and then a tie for 18% around give the retailer more money and don't sell stuff that's unprofitable. I think it's really interesting around the give the retailer more money, because everybody's talking about retail media networks and budget the budget staying the same and not increasing and not being able to share more money. So it's interesting where that falls on the list with the topics that we hear.
And I would encourage you, if you feel like your organization is leaning too heavily into one of these, how can you explore one of the other ones? Because again, kind of more interests, you know, the more interests we bring into the negotiation, the higher the chance of mutual success. So if you're squarely in the give retailer more money camp, what are some ways you can also work within your organization to drive down costs? Or if you're more squarely in the give the retailer more money camp, how can you transition some of that to more performance-based marketing in the drive more revenue, right? Or focusing on loyalty programs and investing there. So I would think about like where you sit and how you might be able to move across the different buckets for some variety. And that'll improve some of the profitability with the retailer, but it also strengthens some of the partnerships internally within your organization. Okay, we are going to cover the RICH framework for mutual profitability. RICH stands for renegotiate, invest in win-wins, carefully optimize advertising, and heed the root cause. And there should be some tactics in here that you can take back and use today within your organization and with your retailers. So the first is renegotiate. And so if you think about this, there's kind of two sets of negotiations that we're approaching. One is internal with our partner teams, and the other is externally with the retailer. So within renegotiate, we kind of have four pieces here. These find your data, isolate your point of leverage, relax and go slow, and make asks. This is actually another course we teach on retailer negotiations. It's called the FIRM framework: find your data, isolate your point of leverage, relax and go slow, and make asks. But with your partner teams, this is really thinking about helping your organization understand how each retailer calculates profitability. So making sure that you're speaking the same language. So internally, if you tend to really look at contribution margin for that retailer, but that retailer is looking at net PPM or some other measure, like training your organization to also measure the same measure that the retailer is using. What gets measured gets done. And same with the retailer, you know, making sure to gather your data and make sure that you're speaking the same language. Next is isolating your point of leverage. With the retailer, every brand is delivering something of value to each retailer. So, you know, maybe if you're, let's say in your Target relationship, you know, you tend to have some really great, exciting innovation that they're always very excited about. They believe it drives traffic into their stores. Maybe with Amazon, you have a high subscribe and save penetration rate. Whatever it is, figure out what your point of leverage is with that retailer. And then similarly within your organization, you know, the business that you're running, if you're running the e-commerce business or if you're running e-commerce for a particular retailer, that customer channel is delivering something for your organization or you wouldn't be doing it. So figuring it out, what is your leverage internally? What value is that partnership driving for the rest of the organization? Next is relax and go slow. Within our own organizations, it's important to be patient. A lot of these changes take a long time. You know, I worked with a manufacturer a while back in the fashion space who implementing a huge MAP policy. And it was an 18-month process for them to clean up their distribution, you know, put pricing policies in place with all of the retailers. I'm not saying everyone should have a MAP policy. I'm just giving an example of like a timeline that that someone was working with. To get all of that cleaned up and for the business to sort of resettle at its new level and to get their organization on board with it, because that was a Herculean effort. We worked with another manufacturer who flipped their business from 1P to 3P and then back again due to some very strange internal dynamics at Amazon. That's a lot of change to undergo, and it took a long time. So just really being patient, considering if you're not doing this already, like segmenting the retailers that your organization works with to inform some of the funding and service levels to provide some more clarity and guidance within the organization. And with the retailer, I'm always surprised I'm always surprised each year how many manufacturers are surprised when the AVN process starts, particularly Amazon, because they send these crazy emails with big asks. But we shouldn't be surprised. It happens every year. We should manage it like a project. Is there a way we can manage it like a project within our organization that has a project manager and internal milestones and delivery dates and you know, and we spend some time up front planning and thinking about what we want to get out of this AVN process. So managing like a project and not being pressured to close. You know, I don't know if we have any smaller manufacturers on the call today, but really thinking about, you know, when those automated asks come through from the retailers, not to click on the accept button. So, and be comfortable asking for more data and more time from the retailer. And then lastly is making asks. So thinking about how do we make a business case for change internally? We kind of talked about those four different ways to improve profit and how we might want to flex from one to the other. So how can we make a business case for that? And there, you know, we often come across like these very channel specific mindsets within organizations. So, you know, this is like, if you're on the Walgreens team, this is a SKU that's really important here. It's important for my business looking after Walgreens. But if that SKU is creating a lot of churn and problems and price matching across the other channels, figuring out ways to help people put their big hat on so that that's not, you know, so that we're able to think holistically as a business, like, does that SKU actually make sense for that retailer in the bigger picture? And then with the retailer, again, when we're thinking about all of our asks and bringing our interests to the table, how can we think outside of our department? So just this, there's no poll here, but just a really quick question for reflection. So I encourage you all to think about a time where you had a really successful negotiation. So what made it a success and how could you like think about that success driver in internal negotiations? So if you're negotiating something internally, how could you take what made you successful and apply it? Okay, so renegotiate, we talked about. Now talking about invest in win-wins to mitigate some of those profit killers. So assortment, you know, really thinking about looking at how do we make a case for some of these things? You know, we know that these are profit improvement tactics, designing for online, exclusives, you know, focusing on auto replenishment and subscriptions, participating in some of the retailer supply chain programs and performance marketing, but how do we make a business case for some of these internally? And from an assortment perspective, you know, these are some great examples on the screen here of products that were designed for online. We think that Tide Pods have always been around, but when I was on the grocery category at Amazon, these were invented because they ship better and they are a little bit of a higher price point. And so, and they're a great online SKU. So a lot of these products that we take for granted, powdered drinks, you know, single serve coffee, were largely successful because they were designed better for e-commerce profitability and they performed really well online. And so I would encourage you to look in your competitive set to see who is being really innovative in this space and who, you know, who's designing products really well for e-commerce success. You can use those SKUs in your business case, right? Like these are some competitors we're looking at and some of the things that we're doing. Another thing we've seen clients do is compare the costs of some of the retrofitting that has to happen as a part of having products that aren't designed well. So if you go to like a liquid laundry detergent, you might have to tape the top of it. You know, it's heavy, it's gonna have a high damage rate, and look at the cost of some of that retrofitting and compare it to the cost of innovation. So that's another thing that we've seen manufacturers be successful with. And similarly with supply chain programs, you know, and performance marketing, again, looking at what does it cost to participate in some of these versus what are you paying in, you know, in increased fees or terms because you've got, there's more cost between production and consumption with that retailer. So that's invest in win-wins. And then next is carefully optimized advertising. And this is an area we're seeing brands be very focused on. You know, it isn't a one size fits all strategy for retail media anymore for a couple of reasons. I mean, first, if you're just bidding on a bunch of high traffic keywords, that's a really unprofitable strategy for you as a brand. But also the capabilities of these retail media platforms have advanced so much in the last couple of years, the targeting capabilities. We can get a lot more specific about who we're going after, both on-site and off-site, and spreading the pie a little bit around, you know, the budgets outside of just Amazon. You know, we're seeing now brands spending, in some cases, almost as much as they spend on Amazon, on maybe Walmart or Instacart, you know, for consumable items. So, really thinking about how can we spend smarter? How can we, you know, move off of some of those more traditional strategies of very high traffic search-based marketing, and or how can we rotate our spend in a little bit more of a hands-on way to win? And this example here was from an organic baby formula, where we were back in my IdeoClick days. We were working with this brand. They couldn't afford to bid on all of the top keywords in that category, and so we took one at a time, and then won that one, and then got some natural search relevance going, and then went to the next one. And then when we were done, we started all over and went back to the beginning. So there are some tactics you can take that are a little bit more, they're a little more time intensive. They take a little bit more of a hands-on approach with your advertising provider, but really thinking about, you know, how can you, how can you stretch your spend a little bit more? And similarly with some of the new targeting capabilities that are available and offsite in particular, you know, if you look at some of the newer demand side platforms like Kroger's Private Marketplace, you know, they have some pretty robust targeting capabilities that are available to target their audience offsite. And they track 96% of all their purchases with their loyalty cards. So some pretty incredible and cheaper investments available to you.
Andrew, how do you think about profitability when it comes to all of the new retail media platforms that are coming out? And like, it feels like every retailer is like, we have a retail media platform, spend more money with us. How, from a brand perspective, do you think about profitability with test and learns and with adding new retailer media networks? Like, what would your process be for evaluating that and deciding where to place your bets?
Yeah. Well, I think for the big ones, like if you're just looking at the Amazon, Walmart, Target, and if you're a sizable brand, it's part of the JBP. So you're committed, like you're going to have to spend a certain amount that year. And so then it's up to you to get smart about how you're going to spend it and really make those dollars work for you. I think it was like on a recent earnings call where Doug McMillon from Walmart said, we don't want retail media to be just a tax, that an extra tax that our brands suppliers pay. We want it to actually add value. And I think most manufacturers I talk to would still think it's a tax, right? So I think if you're contractually committed to a certain amount of advertising and it's all wrapped up in your brick and mortar negotiation too, that's a really tough position to be in. Then you're just trying to figure out, how do I spend it as smart as possible? If you have more flexibility and agility within your organization to move the budgets from retailer to retailer throughout the year, I encourage you to do it. You know, run some tests and learns, do some small tests across the different retail media platforms and find, you know, the ones that seem to be working for you. But, and we have a whole course on retail media advertising strategy. So I could talk about this all day, but I do think it's important to first figure out what you're trying to accomplish with each retailer before even deciding how much to invest. Like, are you advertising on Amazon because they have a specific shopper that you want? Are you advertising on Walmart because there's a competitor that you're concerned about that's gaining share? Like, figuring out what you're trying to accomplish before you start allocating spend, and then tracking those specific objectives in metrics. Like, so if you wanted to get this new customer, are you getting them? Is it working? If you wanted to try to, you know, gain share relative to a competitor, is that strategy working? And then if not, like changing the investment so that you can make that happen. So that's how I would think about it. And in terms of all the new, you know, all the platforms to choose from. But again, it kind of goes back to that agility within the organization. You know, we work with some brands who it's the budget is fixed for the year and that's what it is. And, you know, you don't have a lot of flexibility and then you have to work within that. So we talked about renegotiate, invest in win-wins, carefully optimize advertising, and then H stands for heed the root cause. And so this is really thinking about what are some of the root causes of your profit killers. And this is a great story of a, this was a dish soap, and the supplier launched on Amazon, Walmart, and Target at the same time with the same product. And it was meant to be like, it's a biodegradable, natural dish soap. And they had spent a lot of time and energy investing in that messaging, right? That it's a premium product. So $15.99 dish soap launched on Amazon. Walmart immediately does a rollback to $9.97. Target decides to beat that at $7.99. And then Amazon matched the $7.99 price, which was ill-timed with a $2 vendor-powered coupon, which brought the price down to $5.99. Within 2 weeks, all of the marketing investment that this brand had made in positioning this biodegradable dish soap as a premium product that goes out at a $15.99 price point is now down to $5.99. And Amazon's not interested in selling it anymore because it's now crap. So really thinking about the root cause of some of the profit killers. So on the brand side, you know, what are we talking about here? Is this our distribution strategy? You know, should we sell the same product to everyone? Is this a good product for online? You know, I love this Aveeno example here of like a product that was not well designed for online and required so much prep that when the shopper gets it, they're probably either confused or disappointed or maybe some combination of both. But really thinking about what is the root cause of what's driving those costs between production and consumption, you know, is it our promotional strategy? You know, this $2 vendor powered coupon was probably not a great, idea when we don't know what the market pricing is going to be yet for an item. And so, internally in your organization, gathering data about some of these examples and storytelling are really important skill sets to help evangelize change. Okay, a few takeaways, and then we can take some questions. We may have had some throughout the session. This mutual profitability is critical for e-commerce success, and it is absolutely possible. We talked about some ways that you can achieve mutual profitability today. It requires partnership, it requires trust, it requires interest-based negotiations and thinking outside of our department. But really kind of understanding those retailer-specific dynamics are key. And so understanding their cost structure, their mix of ship-to-home in e-commerce versus online pickup will help you understand the position that they're in coming to the table for a negotiation. We talked about the rich framework for mutual profitability. So renegotiate, invest in win-wins, carefully optimize advertising, and heed the root cause. And so I encourage you all to think about what was your biggest takeaway today? What are you going to take back and use within your organization? Maybe write it down or put it on your phone. And while you're thinking about that, here is how you get your badge for today's course, Mutual Profitability in E-commerce from Allume Group. And if you scan this QR code, you will be directed to a survey. You will get an email with your credentials, and you can post them on LinkedIn for bragging rights for spending an hour with me today and the DSI.
Thanks so much, Andrea. So one question that I have is, you talk a lot about bringing or working with the rest of your organization, so cross-functional engagement. And I think when it comes to profitability, it's really challenging potentially to get the finance team, the sales team, the marketing team, potentially the shopper team, all on the same page, especially when it comes to something like retail media, because different people own the budgets, different people have a different say and understanding of how it works. So what is your best piece of advice for brands that are struggling with that kind of internal engagement and alignment?
Yeah. I mean, I think it really comes down to relationships internally and opening some of those communication lines. So, you know, depending on the size of your organization, you may not really know your counterparts in some of those other areas, or you may know the people that you work with on a day-to-day basis, but not the leadership. And I think, spending some time investing in those relationships is really important. So, you know, not necessarily always just reaching out when there's something that you need, but really taking time to get to know their business and their point of view and what they're measured on, I think can help you make a better business case for something that you need to really understand the other person's perspective. So asking a lot of questions, and really trying to understand where they're coming from, because it might inspire new ideas for you as well in terms of ways to work with like your finance team, for example, to understand the timelines that they're up against, the constraints that they're up against. So I really think it comes down to the relationships.
I think we underestimate that sometimes, that internal relationships and building that team cross-functionally is so important in addition to all of the external factors that we all have to worry about.
And I would also add like having patience, because I think building some of these cases and working inside your organization is it's really time consuming and it can feel frustrating, especially when there's a lot of pressure on the e-commerce teams typically to deliver strong growth, fast growth. You know, these have been the growth channels for a lot of our brands for a long time, and we're expected to keep it that way. And I was, you know, I was looking at a job description for a client recently who's hiring like a new VP of e-commerce. And I looked at, and Melissa and I looked at the job description and we were like, this is an enormous job. Like it is, it covers every single functional area. I mean, it's basically a president, right? Covers every functional area. It had huge goals. They're supposed to double the size of the business. And we were just like, this is a huge job, right? And relative to if you look at, you know, the customer lead for Walgreens or Costco or something in a business that's a little bit more stable. So I think that we can feel that pressure and we can feel like we're in a rush and feel really impatient with some of the rest of our organization. So I would say, you know, find some inner patience, which goes back to the relationships. You know, if you really understand where other people are coming from, you know, naturally that patience follows a little bit.
I feel like patience in e-commerce is a critical skill to have, and
so
cross-functional relationships. Another question around kind of how to measure profitability in your organization. So when you're thinking about how you look at profitability, do you suggest looking at it individually by each retailer, looking at it holistically, like with all of these efforts that you're talking about and all of the different factors that you might be able to do, like increase revenue, spend more with the retailer? How do you actually look at where you make and where you make a difference from a profitability standpoint? Like, how would you suggest assessing that?
Well, I think spending a good amount of time to build that customer P&L is really important. So understanding all the costs, I mean, because if you're measuring, let's say you're measuring profitability, I'll just use Amazon as an example. Let's say you're measuring your organization's profitability on Amazon, but you're not including like all of the chargebacks and outstanding shortage claims. Like that's not a complete picture. And if you're not including that in the picture, you will struggle to get support to help you with that within the organization. And so I think spending some time to really build out that customer P&L, but then also making sure that even if it's different, a different way of looking at profitability than the retailer, that you're also tracking on what the retailer's looking at. Because that's gonna be the focus for your you know, your JVPs or your supplier negotiation conversations is going to be their view of it, right? So I think you have to look at both.
Yeah, understanding both sides of the fence is incredibly important, especially from the brand side, understanding what the retailer is looking for. I'm going to give everyone last opportunity to ask questions. And Andrew, if you don't mind jumping to the slide where they can get in touch with you.
And also, there's some resources in here too. This deck will be available, but some articles we read from some other places that were pretty helpful, and courses. And then, yeah, you can scan this QR code to become a member of the DSI. And over on the right, sign up for our newsletter.
And also, if you visit the Profitability Month page, which I put in the chat, you can receive 50% off and the Illum Group courses for the month of April if you want to take any additional courses. They also have some really great content on the DSI that you can check out. Andrea, thank you so much for joining us today and for walking us through all of these frameworks. And thank you everyone for joining and for some great questions. Really appreciate it. Andrea, thanks as always for being a great partner of the DSI.
Thanks for having us, Lauren. And thanks everyone for attending today. And we hope you got something valuable.
Thanks to Andrea for letting us get a double dose of value out of this impactful content. And thanks to all of you for being part of our community.